our Business of Healthcare correspondent found some unity in Washington over healthcare, but it's probably not what you're thinking. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. At some point later today, or maybe the early morning hours of tomorrow, Senate Republicans will tee up a third healthcare bill as they scramble to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Number three here, dubbed Skinny Repeal, would let employers stop offering health insurance and individuals would no longer have to get insurance one way or another. A tax on medical devices would also end. Joining us from our health desk at WHYY is Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein. Dan, what's this you're hearing about some unity right now in Washington on healthcare?
Yeah, I was talking to a lobbyist yesterday who said he's never seen this before. Doctors, nurses, hospitals, insurers, even patient advocacy groups are all united, David, in their opposition to this larger effort in the Senate. And that's because they don't feel like it's solving the most pressing problems, like stabilizing the individual market or offering help to consumers. Now, today, as you said, you've got the Senate moving forward on this skinny repeal, which, according to a CBO estimate, would leave about 16 million Americans without insurance just next year. From what I'm hearing, this bill is changing by the hour. So lobbyists from industry are working the phones constantly. And with so much at stake financially for them, it's no wonder it's all hands on deck time.
Yeah, could stakes ever be higher with public policy? What, for instance, are hospitals and insurers concerned about especially?
So one of the reasons the insurers went along with Obamacare in the first place is because it meant new customers, and they wanted those new customers. Skinny repeal is going to mean they're going to lose those customers, or at least a big chunk of them. And if you pull this requirement that people buy insurance, it would mean insurers losing their favorite folks, the young and healthy ones. Don't forget, these are the people that kind of make this whole market functional. Hospitals, though, also have a lot to lose. If millions of people lose their coverage, that means more non-paying people walking through the door.
You know, at the same time, some people passionately want Obamacare gone.
That's right. I mean, there'll definitely be some employers out there who are going to be relieved that they don't have to offer employees insurance. That's going to help them keep their businesses open. And then you've got these individuals, too, people who work for themselves. They're not going to have to face the kind of penalty if they don't get insurance. They're going to be psyched about that. One question, though, I think these folks are going to have to consider, though, is if this bill does become law, it could screw up the individual market, which could make it hard for them to buy insurance if they need it.
All right. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein, thank you very much for this. Let's check the markets. Stocks, the DAX index in Germany is down 0.6%. The 100-share index in London is down less than 0.1%. U.S. stock index futures are up, plus 0.5% for the NASDAQ future, plus 0.2% for the S&P future. The Dow future is up 21 points. Senator John McCain made headlines this week by returning to the Senate just days after a diagnosis of brain cancer. We asked a reporter to look at the statistics on people with cancer returning to work and how that might have changed over time. Marketplace's Ryan Kailoff got the assignment.
Here's Senator McCain speaking on the Senate floor after voting to allow the Republican health care bill to proceed.
I've been a member of the United States Senate for 30 years. My service here is the most important job I've had in my life.
He's not the only American working through cancer treatment.
Senator McCain joins about 15 million cancer survivors in the United States, and about 7 million of them are working.
Kathy Bradley is a health economist at the University of Colorado Cancer Center. She says more Americans are working during or after cancer treatment than ever. One reason? More people are being diagnosed with cancer because of early screening efforts. Also, advances in treatment.
Drugs that have better side effect profiles, it's easier to continue working.
Shelley Fold Nasso is CEO of the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship. She says that probably most often,
people have to work while they're in treatment because they need the money.
Even people going through difficult chemotherapy, she says,
often will schedule their chemotherapy for Friday, recover over the weekend, and continue going to work.
Others choose to stay at work for the sense of normalcy or purpose.
My best friend died of cancer about 4 years ago, and he was a doctor, and he wasn't able to continue working. So he had to sell his medical practice, and it was very difficult because it was his identity. And so it would just added to the anxiety, the depression.
Kathy Bradley says many cancer patients also stay at work because they need the health insurance their employer provides.
And many of those who can no longer work are in danger of losing their health insurance altogether.
A recent study Bradley did found that people with cancer who relied on their employer for health insurance worked more hours than those with other insurance options. In New York, I'm Ryan Kailath for Marketplace.
The 10-year Treasury yield this morning is up at 2.29%. The Federal Reserve, we learned, is keeping its key interest rate unchanged at a time when inflation remains persistently low. But it did signal yesterday that it's edging closer to gradually shrinking its bond holdings. It bought trillions of dollars in bonds as economic stimulus, but now it's got to do something with all the stockpiles. Google is one of the companies especially committed to going beyond the flat screen and letting you look around the digital universe. Its cheapest virtual reality viewer goes for $15, and it's made mostly of cardboard. But it needs content, and in a quest to make virtual reality films easier to make, Google is investing in a format called VR180. Look left, look right, but not behind you. And it's partnering with Lenovo and LG to make the 180-degree cameras. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra reports on what could be a milestone in virtual reality filmmaking.
To make a virtual reality film in 360 degrees, you have to shoot from every angle. That means expensive equipment, a ton of post-production, and hiding from the camera behind things like trees. Shooting in 180 degrees is a lot easier.
There's less technical demands.
Eliza McNitt, who makes virtual reality films, says Google's push into VR180 could bring new people into virtual reality filmmaking.
Marketplace's Marielle Segarra there. And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.